You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Attention Browns backers, check out the completely redesigned Browns backers portal and take your experience as a Browns fan to a whole new level with exclusive access, giveaways, and more. Register now for free at fans.clevelandbrowns.com. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm with you again. 216-578-0850 or tweet the show at Browns_daily. Are you bought into this Browns team? And judging so far, you all are. And I'd love to see the Browns continue this momentum on Sunday against Jacksonville, where they are the largest road favorite in the National Football League.
Times are a-changing,
times
brother.
Are a-changing, that's right. But we're going to go ahead and break down some things that have happened with a little after further review.
After further review.
Up first on After Further Review, what is the biggest priority right now with two major injuries on Sunday? Is it the offensive line or the defensive line?
After further review, I'm going to say it's the offensive line. I think because it's the staple of our offense. I think the play of Brian Hoyer, again, as we said all year, at one point he's going to have that game where he might give it to the other team, or it might not be the Brian Hoyer we've seen, or maybe some of those inexperienced receivers kind of come full circle, couple drops, struggle against a really good coverage. But the one staple that we have to hang our hat on is the ability to run the football. And if we lose that, that to me is a game that we will lose. So I think offensive line help and depth is our biggest concern right now.
Yeah, I think because if you're looking at the defensive line, you know, it sounds like you're going to get Ataba Rubin back this week, and Billy Winn should be back sooner rather than later. So that means you're going to get some nice reinforcements that are quality starters in the National Football League. On the offensive line, the good news is you've got Paul McQuiston. John Greco will get all the reps at center this week. And you got Nick McDonald, who's coming up off of the non-football injured list, a guy who started games in the NFL at center and guard, was on those Patriots teams that went to the Super Bowl, was with you in Green Bay, actually, on the practice squad the
yes,
year.
He was
drafted, signed as an undrafted free agent that year in 2010 with the Packers. So this is a guy that they like a lot here in this building. His wrist is checked out, apparently okay, and he should be getting back to work. So I think that you're kind of, it's just nice timing that you're getting a guy who started in the NFL at all three interior positions and has an opportunity to come in and help. And I think ultimately you could see McDonald play some center with Greco back at guard, but for now it'll be Greco and McQuiston. So I do agree with you there. I think the reinforcements are on the way on the defensive side of the ball. Plus you have Jacoby McDaniel on your practice squad who could be elevated right now internally as a guy who made some nice plays, remember, back in that Family Day scrimmage out of Florida State. So I think that defensive line, the depth will kind of have a nice influx as you get Rubin back and you get Billy Winn back here, hopefully sooner rather than later. So I'm going to say offensive line because you're right. That has been the standard of excellence for this team, has started up front. It's allowed the running game to be what it is. You need good protection, especially on play action. Those pass plays take longer to develop. So you need that good offensive line.
After further review.
All right, fellas, Andrew Hawkins has had just 3 catches since the bye week and had no catches on Sunday. Are you concerned about the lack of production, and how do you get Hawk back on track?
After further review, I am not concerned. I think that we know that Brian Hoyer is an equal opportunity quarterback. We also have to take into account that we only threw the ball 17 times, 8 of those being completed for 200 and some plus yards. I think also, too, that the fact that we don't have Benjamin or Gabriel or Austin failing us consistently, so that we have to force the ball to, at that point, our leading receiver, Andrew Hawkins. So his time will come again. And for whatever reason, the Pittsburgh Steelers did an amazing job. As you could tell, some of the routes that we threw and the game planning against the Pittsburgh Steelers were to wide open receivers. So that's, again, confidence coming from Brian Hoyer to throw to an open receiver, but the scheme of Kyle Shanahan to get those open guys.
Part of the reason that Brian Hoyer has been so successful this year and has just the one interception on the season is because he's taking what the defense gives him and what the scheme creates. Now, Andrew Hawkins, he could have had him on that one pass. It was a little behind him. It was dropped, and there was another read where perhaps he could have gone to Hawkins, the one that he threw to Cameron down the middle of the field that ended up getting knocked out. Hawkins was actually wide open in front of him. So I think you're going to get opportunities to get Hawk the ball. They moved him on the second play I was talking about. They actually moved Hawk, if you remember, in motion into the backfield, and he ran a little angle route against one-on-one with the linebacker and ended up getting wide open on that one, but didn't get the football. So Brian Hoyer is going to take what the defense gives you. He's not going to force it in, and nobody on this team is that big 6'4", dominant number one type receiver that you're going to force it into even when they're covered or double covered. So Andrew Hawkins' time is going to come, not worried about it at all. His teams try to say, hey, we got to worry about Travis Benjamin running deep. Hawk's going to be more open on the underneath stuff. Same thing as they worry about Jordan Cameron, as they worry about the run game. So I'm not in any way, shape, or form concerned with Andrew Hawkins. I know he's not either. They're winning. They've won both of these games since the bye week. That's all he cares about, and that's why this team is as successful as it is.
After further review.
So let me know which coordinator you think had the better day, Jim O'Neill or Kyle Shanahan.
After further review, I'm going to go with Jim O'Neill. I think Kyle Shanahan, again, he called a great game. We were dedicated to the run. We threw to wide open receivers that he schemed open for Brian Hoyer and those receivers. But I'm going to go with Jim O'Neill just because Roethlisberger has been who he has been statistically and historically against the Cleveland Browns, and we stopped that. We stopped Antonio Brown, and I thought Jim O'Neill called a great game with not a makeshift, but again, new bodies in that scheme, guys that needed to get coached up in 1 week and played more than they had played in a long time.
I'm going to go with the guy who I think is the best coordinator in the league, and that's Kyle Shanahan. But at the same time, what Jim O'Neill was able to do against the number four offense, knowing that he was missing people, he had a great day. And I think we, in some ways, are losing sight of that because he was kind of under the gun, et cetera, given where this defense was coming into this game, 31st in the NFL. He had more questions. Everybody was already praising Kyle Shanahan. So Kyle Shanahan did what he had been doing. I thought the statement was really made by Jim O'Neill that, hey, we are going to be a good defense. I told you it might take a few weeks, but we're going to get there. Here was the first real evidence of that, and to do it with the injuries on the defense, and I know they had a big role plan for Armani Bryant, adjusting that on the fly, being creative with your schemes to cover up for the fact that you only had three healthy defensive linemen in a game. I give a huge, huge tip of the cap to Jim O'Neill and his staff on the defensive side of the ball for a great game plan, great ability to adjust to hardship on the fly, and really coming through with a successful performance against Pittsburgh.
After further review...
Last up on After Further Review, contenders are pretenders, Dallas Cowboys and the San Diego Chargers.
Well, I'll go with my team first, and I think the San Diego Chargers are contenders. I think that right now in most polls they're listed as either number one or number two, that other team being the Denver Broncos at two or one in front or behind them. I think that those two teams are the cream of the crop in the AFC, so they are a contender. The Dallas Cowboys, at this point in the season right now, I think they are a contender as well. They, of course, have divisional matchups again against the Philadelphia Eagles, who are 5-1, a wishy-washy New York Giants team and a down Washington Redskins. But DeMarco Murray and that run game, will a lot like the Cleveland Browns, will keep them in football games. And I think Tony Romo's decision making to throw the ball to Dez Bryant and Williams as well as Witten will keep them offensively scoring points. So they will be a contender if their defense continues to evolve and grow and perform.
Listen, I said it before, and I'll say it again. I think your San Diego Chargers are playing the best football in the National Football League. I think they're the number one team. I think what the Cowboys are doing is legit. And as I said, as good a job as I think Kyle Shanahan's doing on the offense for the Browns, Rod Marinelli is doing maybe that good of a job on the defensive side of things for the Dallas Cowboys. That has been incredibly impressive to me, his ability to get a lot out of a unit that many people thought was going to be amongst the worst in the league. You've got DeMarco Murray, who has run for 100 or more yards in each of the first six games of the season. The only player in NFL history to do that other than Jim Brown, the great Jim Brown, who happens to be in our building all the time, which is one of the great perks of being out here in Berea. But they are off to a phenomenal start. They've got the horses on offense. Their game plans have been excellent. Jason Garrett doing a good job. Scott Linehan, the offensive coordinator, calling a great game. And, of course, Rod Marinelli working wonders with that D. When you go into Seattle and put up 30 on them and beat them in their own building, you're making a strong statement to the league. And that's exactly what they did in that game as they sit right now at 5-1. And the Chargers, to me, a team that's got it all offensively, defensively. They had their one letdown game. I thought that was a letdown a little bit on the road against the Oakland Raiders. They gave up 28 points, but yet they still, like good teams do, woke up in time and found a way to win. And that's something that's very interesting. Something I teed up to you earlier and didn't get back to was the notion of going into games where you feel like you have a game plan where you go into it. Are there weeks where you go and you go, we just know we're going to win. Our game plan is just so good that we know matching up, they have no answer for what we're going to do.
There is. And in some cases, a lot of that happens. It happens a few times throughout the season, but you feel really confident like that coming out of a bye week where you have such a strong understanding. Or also, too, you find that when you're playing a team for the second time, so meaning a divisional opponent, where you know the personnel inside and out, you know their scheme inside and out, and your coaches are like mad scientists, and you feel like you've mastered that puzzle, and they've got the perfect antidote to put the Ben Roethlisberger fire out, or the Joe Flacco fire out, or the A.J. Green, Andy Dalton fire out. So it is definitely true, and I think, as we saw this week, Jim O'Neill, that's why he got my, you know, which coordinator had the best day, because I think that Ben Roethlisberger was this flame, you know, that has just burnt up the Cleveland Browns for so long, and Jim O'Neill yes. and these guys put that fire out, and they put it out very quickly, and our offense did their job. So absolutely, Nathan, to say that, it's you learn about a team an awful lot. You know them really well. I thought we would have thought the Tennessee Titans, we would have played them better because of the knowledge
of
we
the
had
bye.
About them.
Yeah.
Because of the bye and also, too, Horton and Loggins and all those great things. And it kind of maybe not really worked against us, but we didn't use it to our advantage. But it is definitely true. And but also, too, stats don't lie. You know, and I mean, I know this is a good football team coming up in the Jacksonville Jaguars, hungry for a first win, but we've just been dropped off by the media staff here, some of their stats, and they are not really that good of a football team offensively. And I think defensively, they just give up a lot of yards as well.
They give up a lot of yards. They don't convert on third downs. They don't stop anybody
they
from converting third downs against them. They are one of the worst running teams in the National Football League. You're exactly right. This is a matchup that the Browns should win. So let me ask you, when you're a good team, right now, I mean, they're averaging 69.5 yards rushing per game. That is not going to get the job done against the Cleveland Browns or really any team in the NFL. But when you're a good team, let's take San Diego, for example. We both think they are legit, and yet they go on the road against an Oakland Raiders team that, as you said, you would first totally expect to beat, no question about it, and they find themselves in a dogfight. How does that happen, number one, and what is it about the good teams that allow them to respond to that, absorb those blows, and get the W?
I think first and foremost, it's the fact that you know, the Cleveland has to travel, so we'll be in what some people might say hostile territory. Although I don't believe there's going to be a, you know, a massive amount of noise or a sellout. More people will be partying up in the swimming pools in the Jaguars stadium. But I think it's an opportunity for the Cleveland Browns to, if we start fast, I think we have people heading for the exit sooner than later, because they feel like the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to get the same result. It's just going to be another loss. A lot of the same feelings that so many Browns have had, and why we've heard multiple callers say or sit at home and like, I was actually tuned in to see the final, you know, the finality of the game, the finality of that victory. And I think it's an opportunity for the Cleveland Browns to go out and stake claim at this game very, very early that, yes, national attention and power rankings and we're all this, but back that up. Back that up against a team that you should beat, you know, and they will cower away. And again, and a rookie quarterback with Blake Bortles, that's where you start. We as the San Diego Chargers are a good football team. Used to love those situations because you pad your stacks, you know, and that's why I say Sheard and Kruger and even Mingo gets on the board. They start sacking Bortles. You know, you get Gibson and Hayden might get his first pick and Screen gets another one. So when you've got them eating, you're eating out of their hand and you're just, you know, playing your best football in a dominant performance, a team like the Jacksonville Jaguars, hungry for a first win, will hand you that football.
Well, this is a good one for the defense, as you pointed out, as we're looking at the stats here and just kind of starting to soak them in. The Jacksonville Jaguars, dead last in the NFL, 13.5 points per game. Dead last in the NFL, 290 yards per game. Dead last in the NFL, 69.5 rushing yards per game. Dead last in the NFL, they've allowed 27 sacks. Nobody else has allowed more than 22. They are not a good offensive football team, and you're right. This is a game where they can come out and certainly, hopefully, add to their defensive
resume. Put two in a row together.
Yep. Two strong defensive efforts, which would really, if they do that, would be now putting together 10 straight quarters of dominant defense, which would be great to see for the Cleveland Browns. But, yes, the opportunity is there. What do the players – so it's a Tuesday, okay? It's the players' day off. Do you think guys like Dante Whitner are reaching out to some of the other guys saying, hey, man, I know it's our day off. That was awesome, but let's not let this one get away. What is the message that some of these veteran leaders, or is this something that comes strictly from the coaches?
No, it comes from some of the leaders as well. And again, it's hard because some of the relationships are still so new. I would say that Dante wouldn't necessarily go out of his way to reach out to any player and say, hey, you know, let's get into the facility, watch a little film. But Dante might reach out to some of his closer friends, maybe Tashaun Gibson, or if he's hanging with Joe, hey, let's get in and watch some film. Let's stay on our game. Let's keep this rolling and have that conversation with them. But then also, too, what like I said, is a younger player like maybe Crowell, who was active and a huge part of this Steeler win, might call a guy like Terrence West, whose head might not necessarily be in the game, and go, for all I know, they could hang together, they could not. They might be living together, for all we know, in an apartment or somewhere. And they're going to go, hey, I'm heading to the facility. Come with me. Not, hey, do you want to come with me? Come with me, because he knows the good that it will prove moving forward.
All right, before we give our final thoughts on this Browns team, real quickly, what stood out to you from this weekend in the National Football League, if anything?
What stood out to me is that Seattle is beatable. And I think that, again, in that place is not the place it used to be. The Dallas Cowboys put together a great performance to get a victory up there. And so many people, I know Tony Grossi, the Cleveland Browns, ESPN Cleveland writer and analyst, was like, kept going, well, they're going to go 15-1, even after that loss to San Diego. Is there a beatable football team? And I do think what I'm learning over the course of time is the San Diego Chargers are real, but more so than anything, the Cleveland Browns, if you look at our schedule, we know who we play those next three. We've said it time and time again. But the Cincinnati Bengals have the Colts, I believe, and the Ravens back to back coming up in the next 2 weeks. So in 2 weeks, we could be talking about the AFC North leading Cleveland Browns. That gets me excited.
That gets me excited as well, but they've got to take care of that business. One thing that really stood out to me is about this Cincinnati Bengals team that we thought was going to be such a defensive powerhouse, and it was over the first 3 weeks, giving up 16, 10, and 7, gave up 43 to New England, and then followed that up with 37 to Carolina in a tie. By the way, NFL, get rid of ties. It's stupid. Everybody there is risking serious bodily harm. They're putting their lives and careers on the line, and to have a tie is absolutely ridiculous.
It's a pass-fail league, right? So either pass.
I wonder how Pat would handle that. What would he say? What would he say on that?
I don't know.
That would be a tough one. I don't want to have it happen. I want only wins.
Exactly.
That's what I want here. I think that I saw Cincinnati's having a little bit of a tough time on defense, which is good to see, obviously, from a Browns standpoint. The Patriots are back. They look very good to me. I think that the Atlanta Falcons are not as good as many people thought they might be this season, and they'll be on the Browns schedule coming up, actually, for the first game. Josh Gordon's first game back will be in the Georgia Dome
in
Atlanta.
And your boy Theodore Bridgewater struggled mightily.
Ooh, ugly day for Theodore. Burn that tape three times. The Detroit Lions defense is for real.
They're an up-and-down football team, too, though.
Because of their offense.
Exactly, because of their offense, which is a surprise, but they're missing Reggie Bush and Calvin Johnson as well.
And they came out with another dominant defensive performance. Big game from the Baltimore Ravens as well there. Green Bay finds a way to win. San Diego finds a way to win. Those are good teams that are going to continue to be in the hunt all season long. Same with the Colts. The Giants laid an absolute egg in Arizona, first place in the NFC West. No question, that team is for real. A ferocious defense and an exciting offense. They got Carson Palmer back this week. That'll do it for Cleveland Browns Daily here today. Wanted to say thank you very much to Jabal Sheard for joining us, Gerard Cherry, our great producer Emmett Golden, my pops Pedro in studio today. For Matt Wilhelm, I am Nathan Zagura saying we love that you're all bought in. We're all bought in. Tomorrow we turn our attention to Jacksonville. On to Jacksonville here. Thank you for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven
by Liberty Ford.
The preceding program was a production of the Cleveland Browns and a part of the Browns Media Network.